Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood, tips and tricks,
products we love,
and brands that we can't live without. Let's get into it.
Well, I don't know about you, but I just feel like I've got back from the best first date of my entire life.
And there is no, well, there's a bit of heavy petting, actually.
From a distance.
And some nakedness, you know, in the shower. I mean, it was a bit of an X-rated first date, really.
To be honest, yeah.
Several changes of clothes, packed an overnight bag. No, I'm joking.
All the possibilities were endless. For those of you that don't know what we're talking about, Georgia and I have just got back in from spending our first day together this year.
When you say it like that, it actually sounds crazy. Because it was in December? That
November.
We saw each other. Mm. Oh my God, November.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and it was so nice. It was
Wasn't
so
it lovely?
Nice. We had lunch. The thing is, though, when Zoe and I meet up, we kind of spend about an hour doing work and then like the next 4 hours eating lunch, chatting, basically enjoying being without our children.
Yeah, we're kind of the worst people at taking photographs and stuff because we're like, oh shit, we've got to document everything because we're just having such a nice time. But do you know what? I think that's what loads of people have missed. Loads of people have just missed being in each other's company. Like I remember just sitting there when we're having lunch and just looking at you thinking, this is just so lovely. This is filling my heart up with joy. So thank you. I had the best day.
Yay.
And we did take some photographs, which we'll be posting over the next couple of weeks for you. And we even shot a reel of our day of fun.
We did, which will have gone up last night.
Yes.
If you're listening to it. And that is a snapshot of what we got up to yesterday.
No boobs on there though. Gratefully.
No boobs
gratefully
on there.
So we need to get into the chat because it was a really nice kind of interesting conversation that took place last week. We recorded it, and I think both Georgia and I feel quite guilty about the lack of time that we spend, kind of quality time, doing activities with our children. You know, we see all this amazing creative stuff online and on Instagram, and then we look at our own activity stations and we're like, oh no, there's just a dried up old pen and a magazine that we got from the supermarket that's half coloured in already. So I think it's the pressure to come up with like really interesting creative things. I find it quite difficult.
Yeah, so do I. And I think as well, like if we're really honest, we don't really enjoy like playing with our kids that much. And that might sound terrible to some of you who might enjoy it, and that's great if you do, but I just don't. I don't really like playing like with the little dollies and the little characters and the dinosaurs and all that kind of stuff. I don't mind sitting doing a bit of colouring or whatever.
Yeah, painting, colouring, I quite enjoy.
A lot of you will know that isn't always as it seems. Like you think, oh, I'll get all the paints out and then they'll sit there for ages and ages. But in reality, like for, especially with Axel, he'll paint for about 3 minutes. It will go a funny brown colour where he's basically mixed all the colours together, and then that's the end of it. So I think we really wanted to have a chat with the lady that we're talking to today, just about some ideas that don't take hours and hours to set up, that don't create too much mess, but
keep them entertained.
Exactly. Yeah. Keep them entertained, and maybe they might learn something along the way.
Yeah. And I guess one of the big wins that's come out of Luna kind of turning four and sort of, you know, she'd be five in September is her ability to now sit down and play games with me. So for example, like the shopping list game, we absolutely love tummy ache game, any of those orchard games. She really loves them, you know, but anything outside of that, I'm like, computer says no. So yes, hopefully today's chat will bring you a little bit of inspiration if you're in the similar boat to Georgia and I. Who are we chatting to today?
Today we are chatting to the lovely Daisy Upton, who is known as the 5 Minute Mum.
So joining us on the podcast is Daisy Upton. Hello, how are you?
Hi, I am good, thank you.
Have you got 5 minutes, Daisy?
Have I got 5 minutes? I actually, for the first time in 2 weeks, got more than 5 minutes because my kids have gone back to school today. Yay!
Now, did you get that right? Because I don't know if you've seen this morning, but I got my eldest daughter dressed, ready for school. My husband took her up there, which isn't close, and she doesn't go back to school today. Goes back tomorrow. Tomorrow!
I'm one of those people that when I'm like out walking out the door, I'm like, oh, have I got this right? Is this right? And then as soon as I'm like looking for anyone else walking to school that's got the same uniform, I'm like, oh, thank God.
I'm glad that we're all in good company here because we all do stuff like this regularly.
My son's got a tally. He's 4 and started primary school this year. And I think the other day he told me I've forgotten his PE kit 7 times. And I was like, oh, right, okay. I'm glad you're keeping a tally on me. That's fantastic. Why don't you remember your own?
You think that the biggest judgment's going to be like from the other parents who've all got it all together, and actually it's your own kid that's just solely judging you entirely the whole time. I actually wrote a page about it in my new book because I was like, one of the days I'd remembered all this stuff that they needed. It was like a ridiculous list of things, and I'd remembered it all and I'd forgotten their water bottle.
Yes, I do that.
And I had this like massive moment of like, oh my God, I'm the worst parent ever. They're going to be parched and dehydrated. Obviously school just give them a cup of water. I felt really, really bad. And then I was walking back home from school having realized I'd forgotten it, and thought, do you know what, let's list all the other stuff I did remember this morning. And I made a list to myself in my head. I did 5 things I did remember. And I was like, hey, I remembered all of that. Just stop kicking myself over the one little thing. And so I wrote in the book, I wrote a page called The List of 5 about listing off 5 things you have done when the one little thing goes wrong and you're kicking yourself.
I like that because I think there's so much pressure on parents today to get everything right all the time. And like you said, you feel that you're going to get pressure from the other parents. You feel you're going to get pressure from the school. We put pressure on ourselves, but actually we're all just trying to do the best we can. And obviously with the school holidays as a working mums, it's not easy to juggle that. I feel a bit like a fried egg at the moment. I'm just like, you know, it's a lot.
Your brain's just going a million miles an hour, I find, all the time, especially in those manic mornings, isn't it? You're like listing off stuff in your head and you're like, and what do I need to do afterwards? And I've got 6 hours now to try and cram all the stuff in. And I think it's when you're going at 100 miles an hour, isn't it, that you always drops off, and it's just kind of letting yourself say, well, do you know what, it's not the end of the world.
Exactly. And Daisy, take us back. So you started blogging, how long ago was that, and what made you start blogging about, I guess, ways to play with your children?
So I started blogging, it was almost to the day 3 years ago. So Florence and Ewan my eldest was 3 and Florence was 1. So I was kind of out of that newborn, you know, survival mode year where Florence was just sleeping and feeding and I was just, you know, CBeebies was on and we were just trying to get through the days. And then we kind of moved into this next phase. And I think that's how it goes with kids, isn't it? You've got like a little chunk of time that's a kind of phase and you're in a sort of routine for that. And then you move on. And it felt like this big shift in that they were both kind of in a place where I could entertain them a little bit. And my background was as a teaching assistant. I mean, before that, I was in sports broadcasting and PR and all those sort of stuff. And then I decided to, I wanted to be a teacher. So I started volunteering in schools and became a teaching assistant and doing some training around it. Then I got pregnant, then I had Ewan. So that was kind of like my lead up to it. And so I had, as a teaching assistant, I had worked with lots of children one-to-one that couldn't necessarily, you know, they were finding it really difficult in the mainstream classroom to sometimes pick up on certain things. So I would do one-to-one sessions with those children outside the classroom, and we'd have to find another way for them to learn whatever it was in the classroom. So the teacher would have done a great job of teaching it, but for some reason that child hadn't picked it up. So I had to be quite creative and think, okay, let's think of another way that this child might get on board with learning number bonds or learning how to spell this or phonics. And so that was my job. And it was only when I'd come through those first newborn years where I felt like my creativity was just deadened and I was just sleep deprived and I hadn't done any games and activities with them as babies. And then I hit 3 and 1 and I thought, this is my zone. This is where I can do stuff. Ewan was 3. He was sort of just starting to take an interest in numbers and letters, you know, in that really vague kind of what's that mummy way. And so I started putting those skills I had into practice at home with them, with mainly Ewan. Florence usually was napping or. And I did a few activities and ideas and I posted them just on my personal Facebook page. And I had quite a few of my friends saying, well, what are you doing? What's this? How do I do it? And I got fed up of texting them all the same thing. So you set it up like this. And then I thought, do you know what? Maybe I'll start a blog. Maybe that would be, you know, I've done some blogs over the years. I always loved writing and doing stuff like that. None of them had ever had more than 15 viewers ever. And half of them was me. So I just thought, I'll start a little blog. And I started it. And it literally started and went vroom, straight away. It was just went bonkers. And I think I got a 6 months later, I had a literary agent asking me if I wanted to write a book. So
you know why that is, though, because you've got this secret potion to what every single parent in the whole entire world wants to know. And that is, how do I entertain my kids in an educational way that engages them, teaches them things? Because most of us just put, you know, and I love a tray of pasta. I think that's also really good. An interesting way to teach kids how to play. But constant pressure to come up with new ideas for them, it's quite overwhelming, I think. And I think you can get kind of caught up with things and you don't know, you know, I always go back to this, like making a dinosaur out of a loo roll. Like lots of people don't know how to make things like that. And I'm not that creative when it comes to my kids. And I do find it quite difficult. So, you know, I think what you just completely hit the nail on the head when you decided to start doing it. I can imagine people just jumped on it. And now you've obviously written a book. I mean, it's how many books now?
2 are out. I'm writing my 3rd one now. So
wow.
I think as well, like you were saying, and this is the key to it, right, is there's all these brilliant things for kids to do. I'm like, yeah, making a dinosaur out of a loo roll, I'm sure it's great for a kid. But I don't want to do that. That's really boring. And it makes a massive mess, like, for me to clear up. Kid's not going to clear up. It's me that's doing it. And that's what I really wanted to get out with my games. I was like, these need to be fun for me. They need to be something I want to do, because that's the key to it. The kid's going to want to do anything with you one-to-one. Like, they just like spending time with, you know, people that love them. But if I thought, like, the key to it for me was finding something that I actually wanted to play with them, because then it would mean I would do it more often. And if I could make it quick and easy for me, then that's where I was kind of coming in at it from that angle. Like, what do the parents want to do? Not what do the kids need? Because the kids, you know, what they need is just love and attention. That's, you know, mostly what it is. So it's just about making it a bit less boring for me.
I think what sold it for me was, first of all, it's called the 5-minute mum, which I loved, because that's all I ever want is just 5 minutes to myself. Like, please just give me 5 minutes to myself. So I bought the book thinking, great, I can just set something up and then I can sit back, have a cup of tea and let them get on with it. But also what I love is that your games and the things that you put in the book don't take long to set up, and they're all things that most of us have got at home. It's just like pieces of paper and cutting them up and writing letters and numbers on them or whatever, and nothing's too complicated. So I think there's so much, like, you see, you know, on Instagram and, you know, even just in books and stuff, people have these craft cupboards with like all of this stuff in. Like, I don't have Hobbycraft in my house. Do you know what I mean? I can't turn around and get all of this stuff out. So
got a great booze cupboard though, George.
I've got a great booze cupboard. Actually, my father-in-law commented on that quite disgustingly yesterday. But anyway. Yeah, that's what I love. Yeah, that
is that grab and go kind of
thing. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I need. I'm the same. I can't. I mean, I started the first book, and if you read the introduction, but I talk about the one time I tried to paper mache with my kids, and I had flu, and I was like, I've got to entertain them like for a long period of time in the house. What can I do? And I decided I Pinterested something, and it was paper mache. I was like, I don't know what I was thinking. I was clearly completely delirious, and then. It was just a massive mess, disaster. You know, I did it all, basically. And yeah. Then I cleared it all up again. And I was like, they've got absolutely nothing out of this. Like, what am I doing? And that was, yeah, I was like, I am not a crafty person. I need it to be grab a spatula out of my cupboard, or, you know, can we play a game with some post-its and a pen? Like, that's, I'm the same. It needs to be something that's out on the side in the kitchen or somewhere that I'm going to walk past and just, I can grab it and go.
How often should we be doing this sort of activity with our kids, and why is it important to bring it in at a certain age, do you think?
There are loads of studies. I think the most crucial thing that all my activities, especially in the first book, because they're for ages kind of 1 to 5, so that first getting ready for school kind of years, toddler years, and there's a lot of research about children's speech and language at that age, which is the most crucial thing, because once they've got their speech and language kind of, you know, at a confident level, then everything else builds off of that. So there's a lot of studies that sort of say, you know, 10 minutes one-to-one face-to-face time with them at least a day playing is really beneficial to children. And I tend to say that I'll set up a 5-minute game. So if the kids are at home all day, we'll set up a 5-minute game in the morning, and then we'll set one up in the afternoon. And I'll know then that I've engaged with them during both of those periods of time. So, you know, in the morning, I quite often would do that first. So I'd set up the game, we'd play, I'd spend that, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it is of the activity, completely engaged with them, down at their level. Quite often I suggest sitting down at their level on the floor or sitting at a table with them where they can see your face. And then I'd tick that off for the morning, and then I'd crack on and I'd say, right, well, there's the game. You can either play it, carry on playing it yourself, or you can go and play something else. And now mummy's going to go and do the washing, or I'm going to go and tidy up this, or I'm going to go. And that was what it was all about for me. So it kind of, it did two things. One, it was giving my child that one-to-one time, which, you know, studies tell us is really important. And then two, just easing my guilt, because then I could go and do that stuff and think, no, you've been played with, like, off you go. And I could say to them, go and play. Mummy's played with you already, go and play. And then it would be the same sort of in the afternoon. And then obviously we switched the telly on at that point. And then in the afternoon, it'd be the same thing. I'd try and early on engage them in an activity. We'd do something together. And then I could crack on with other things I needed to in a work line.
And give us an example of the sort of games that you would set up. So you say you're setting up a game. Talk us through what that looks like.
So one of the faves, which loads of my followers play all the time, I get tagged in, is Toddler Pong. So it's just beer pong for toddlers. So we've all had a game of beer pong on a hen do, or, you know, and that was where it came from. I went on my hen do and we were playing Prosecco Pong, and I had a ping pong ball fell out of my handbag while I was trying to sort my bag out from coming home, and I picked it up and I was like, well, there's no reason the kids couldn't have a go at this, we just, you know, take out the Prosecco. And so I just grabbed 6 plastic cups that the kids use out of the cupboard, set them up on the floor, like you say, cut out some letters or numbers, whatever it was they were learning. I think Ewan at the time was even on words, tricky words at school, popped them in, and I was like, right, let's see if we can get this ball in a cup. And he was bouncing it around the kitchen for ages. And when it went in, I'd say, what have you got? What have you got? And he'd take it out and have a go at reading it. So there's your education. Boom. He's bouncing the ball around. I'd do it with him for one go. So we'd play a game against each other, trying to get the ball in the cup. And then I could empty the dishwasher and he would carry on bouncing it around, playing, yeah, or set up his own thing. So it's kind of games like that. That it's just
Toddler Pong. What a great
Toddler Pong. Do you know what I think? I think it's really difficult as parents, especially this year where we are trying to work from home. We're, you know, there's a lot of pressure on women, especially like to do housework and all of those sorts of things, that the thought of playing with your children can feel quite overwhelming. Like, I know I don't particularly enjoy it. And I think,
it's quite difficult to say that. Like, I really don't like going to the park.
No, well done for being
I just tick it off and I think, oh, well, at least I've been. I don't particularly like sitting on the floor and playing with, like, little characters. Like, I just sit there thinking about all of the other things that I need to be doing, and this is not what I want to be doing.
You like role play, though. You like being a cat, don't you, George?
Oh, I love being a cat. Yeah, yeah. That's my main role.
It's a favourite.
Yeah, it's my fave. But I do, I just think, it is really difficult, and
I think that's it. Everyone feels like they have to do it for quite a long time, yeah. I think. Mm. And that's what I think a lot of parents struggle with, and I've done it as well. Like, you know, we're gonna play with the Barbies or whatever now, and it's like, oh god, I can just feel my soul leaving my body of this, like, saying the same thing, acting it out. But my daughter's loving it, and that's fine, and obviously we all do that as parents because we love our kids. But you also want to play games where you get something out. And if there's like a competitive element, or you feel like you're doing something sneakily educational, you know that it makes you feel better. So it's kind of that motivation. But yeah, I completely agree with Georgia. Like, I think I find it boring. Like, I loved playing with dolls as a kid, but now I can't think of anything like, well, you know.
There's always a scary doll just lurking around the corner when, like, either in some sort of weird bath outside or, like, you know, underneath a stool. You know, they're just everywhere.
Florence has got a talking one now, so sometimes you'll just be in the house and you'll just go, Mama, Mama.
Oh, like, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's Chucky. Yeah. Chucky's in the house.
I find that at night when I'm walking, I've put the kids to bed and I'm walking around the house and I just suddenly hear, like, and you're like, whoa, what was that? And then you walk into another room and there's, you think, oh my god, like, what is going on? It's all the toys making, like, all of the noises.
The toys are really alive, guys. That's the issue here. I've noticed with Kit, my son, who's just about to turn 3, he is really into repetition. So I've noticed recently, so like you were saying about the fact that, you know, playing with your kids for hours on end, who's got the time for it, who wants to do it? But if you set something up, like you said, I've noticed that he'll just keep doing it over and over and over again, and he gets a lot of enjoyment out of doing it, completing it, starting again, doing it, completing it, starting again. So it's quite interesting that you say that, because I think, like Georgia pointed out, there is a lot of pressure on us to kind of just be the entertainers, be the clowns all day long, just constantly providing them with stuff. But it obviously works, setting them up with something that they can do themselves and then leaving them to it. They've got to learn to play independently, don't they?
Yeah, and that's the thing. And that's what I brought to this activity. I felt like, as a teaching assistant, I'd worked in nursery classes and in school, and I kind of felt like the teachers were keeping this sort of secret to play, which they weren't sharing, not because they were purposely keeping it, but I was like, there's a secret here to what the teachers and nursery staff do and that works. And what it is they have a setup where they'll introduce the activity. It's called an input time, and they'll do 10 minutes where they'll show the children how to do it. Because you're introducing a new game. You know, if you do something like toddle pong, if you just left the ball out and a cup, they wouldn't necessarily know to bounce it in. They don't have that kind of experience. So you spend 10 minutes doing the input in a class where you show them the game, and you'll demonstrate with some of the children, and you'll do it with them, and you'll talk, and, oh, I won, and you'll do all the big CBeebies presenter type, oh, isn't this great? And then teachers then don't spend one-to-one doing every set with the children. They send them off to let them choose to do it, if they want to do it, if they don't, and let them join in. And that's kind of what the approach that I brought to all of my games in my books. And I have something called the Golden Rule, where I set the game up and the children decide if they want to play. And then you do the 5-minute input where you show and play with them. And then you let them choose whether they want to do it. And it just takes all that pressure off. And I kind of felt like I was sharing, like, a trade secret a little bit.
Yeah.
When I was saying it. But I was like, this is what experienced early years professionals who are so fantastic at, and why they can manage that whole group of 30, which we often as parents think, how are you doing that? I can't manage my one at home. Like, how are you managing 30 of them? Mm. But it's because they use this technique, and it works really nicely.
I think it's really interesting how you were talking about how kids learn in different ways, because this time last year, I just found out the primary school Axel was going to, and, like, Zoe, you, like, last week you'd have found out where Luna was going.
And I did.
I think when it's confirmed where they're going to school, you suddenly feel this, like, they're going to school and they need to be able to do this and they need to be able to do that. And I was worried, like, my son's young, he's an August, you know, an August baby, I think he's the youngest in the school, and so I wanted to be able to prepare him for school, so, like, he could recognize his name and like, get dressed and all that kind of stuff. But he definitely wasn't at the stage where I could sit with him and practice letters. Like, he just wasn't there, and he just wasn't interested. To be honest, he doesn't even really like writing now, like particularly. But I think it's really interesting how you were saying that kids do learn in different ways, and it isn't just about sitting down with them and being right, okay, we're going to learn the alphabet and we're going to learn phonics, and it's about preparing them in like in different new ways. And like finding you know, like making it fun. So what, like, how, you know, any parent listening to this whose child is starting school in reception, what advice would you give them?
Well, there's a nice list of things that you can do, some of which you just mentioned, Georgia, saying, you know, kind of helping them get dressed, you know, teaching them how to zip up their own coat and stuff like that, and talking them to them about it, talking to them about, you know, what sort of things that they're going to look forward to about school, and just getting them ready in like a really general way. And like you say, it's really helpful if they can recognize their name, or at least the first letter of their name. But knowing the alphabet, knowing how to count to 10 isn't necessary, because teachers, that's what they're there for. That's what they're prepared to do. Now, obviously, what I do is play games with those numbers and letters to kind of introduce them in a really pressure off fun way, and try and flip it so that the priority is never to learn the letters and numbers. That's never the priority of the game. It's always just to have a laugh with them and to spend 5 minutes playing. And so I think that's sort of is my biggest tip, is to tune into your child on what they like best. So for Ewan at that age, and I was the same, as like, oh my God, he's starting school, what do I do? And the first thing I do was just kind of really tune into what does Ewan really enjoy at the moment. And what it was for him was like vehicles. So he's dead into like trains and diggers and tractors. So all of the things that we did were around trains and diggers. And I was bringing letters and numbers and his name, mostly just, it would be W-A-N, letters into that play. So, you know, we dig, bury them in the sand, and the digger would have to dig them out. And we know we'd bring, put them on the back of the train, and the train would have to take them to the right station, always going to the station with the S on it, you know. And it was just about finding what was fun for him, and then integrating that little bit of learning into it. And again, I've done some games in my first book about like a coat race, so trying to teach them how to zip up their coat. And it's a, you know, it's a race, you turn it into something funny or silly. And there are some other games in the first book, I've gone out of my head now, but like all about teaching them how to dress. And then just getting them to be really confident about asking for help, because that's what they need to do when they first start, is just put their hand up or ask an adult if they need anything at all, whatever it is, nose wiped, you know, bottom wiped, go to the toilet, can I have a drink, can I, and all of those things, just reminding them that they can ask, they can always ask, and people will help them.
We'll be right back after the short break.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So welcome back, back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Where were we?
Because this is me. This is happening in September for me. And I suddenly feel quite nervous since you were just talking about it in the last like 2.5 minutes. But I think for me, because there's going to be some parents that are listening that genuinely are, you know, super busy doing other things, and they've got their work, and they're trying to just basically trying to survive. And that seems quite overwhelming. And I think someone said something to me the other day about Luna, and they said, you know, she's so social and she's really kind. And so, you know, she's okay, she could write her name and she could do a few other bits and pieces. I'm so proud of her. That's brilliant. But that's what the teachers are there for. And actually what I want her to go in is feeling confident and feeling excited and not putting so much pressure on her to be like, oh, well, you need to know how to write sentences and you need to know phonics and all this. I haven't done any of that with her. She's picking that up at preschool, which is brilliant. But I'm also just wanting her to be excited about starting somewhere. And like you said, being able to say, can I have some help? And, you know, I think as parents, we just want them to be able to do all of those things before they go to school. But that's what they do. That's what they do when they get there, isn't it?
I mean, and it's called reception in England, yeah, isn't it? And I think that's a really good word for it, because that's all it is that first year. They're still in the early years curriculum. So it's all about learning through play. And the teachers are highly skilled at making it a really enjoyable, welcoming environment for children. So that first year is just literally, let's get them used to this, you know, let's get them used to what an assembly is and how it is to line up and when you go to your lunch and how you put your coat on and at certain times of day and getting used to going to the toilet and washing your hands and all of those little things that they have to fall into line with in school. That's what they're doing in that first year. And it's just kind of, they've got a long time to be educated ahead of them. And as parents, our only job, I feel, is to be their cheerleaders and to be the person saying, you know, you can do it, and giving them loads of support and one-to-one time, whatever it is, if it's playing a 5-minute game, if it's sitting watching their favourite TV show and talking about it with them, reading a book, whatever it is, just having that, grabbing those few minutes. And like you say, everyone is so busy at the moment and it's so difficult juggling, you know, especially in a pandemic as it is, but anyway, it just is busy. And so it's just grabbing those few minutes to make sure that they feel like, how do you feel about this? How can we talk about it and that kind of thing?
I'm more worried about her emotional side that I am to her sort of learning side. I said to her this morning, she said, oh, Isla's been mean to me. She laughed at me because I spilt some toothpaste down my top. And I sort of got hold of her and I said, people are going to laugh at you. People are going to be mean to you. People are going to do X. And she was like, people are going to be mean to me. And I was like, well, no, but in life, people are going to laugh. Like, you've got to learn to laugh back. Like, she's so uber sensitive and emotional about everything. So for me, I kind of want to make her a little bit more robust. I think the learning side of it, she'll really love. But I want her to be able to be like, okay, well, someone's laughing at me. Just laugh back. I just said, laugh back at her. Like, laugh back. Put some toothpaste on her face, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Was Axel the same? Were you worried about his emotional stuff? Yeah.
So weirdly, I wasn't worried about that. Like, that wasn't my worry when he was starting school. He's confident and he's, you know, before he started, I wasn't worried about it. But now I'm more worried about it. Having had, since September at school, all of these things come up so much more than they ever did before. I think he's around different children that he's not been with before. Maybe some kids are a bit more rough and tumble than he's used to. It's crazy. I think looking back now, I was so set on, you know, he's so young and I really want him to be able to, you know, get dressed and I want him to be able to wipe his bum and I want him to be able to do all these things before he starts school. But actually, fundamentally, I think the most important thing is how he reacts to other children. And like you say, Zoe, it is like teaching them that you're not going to like everybody. Like, you're not going to like it. And not everyone's going to like what you like either. That was the other thing. It's like, I want to play in the sandpit, but, you know, Dev doesn't want to play in the sandpit, so he can't be my best friend anymore. You're like, no, mate. No. And they are just all playing, but they kind of start learning they don't all like doing the same thing.
But as parents to kids that are going to school for the first time, we don't know what to expect. And I guess, Daisy, it's you know, you've been in that environment. You can impart all of that knowledge through your books and kind of give people that are reading it a real insight into what, you know, what's going to be really beneficial for them, what's going to set them up really well before they get into school. And then obviously, you know, when they're there, so it's like, it's great.
Yeah.
We need you on speed dial, Daisy.
Well, I'm hoping that's what my second book is kind of like, in that it's that bridge between, and because I've been on both sides now. So I've been the teacher welcoming children on their first ever day in reception, and I've been the parent who's sending their kid off. And trust me, even as somebody who's been on that other side, I still felt all the same nerves and confusion and, and that everybody feels when they send their first child off to school. And so I really wanted to write this second book, Time for School, to kind of say, It was all the questions that all my friends asked me in that first few years about, like, what are they learning about? What does this mean? Why am I getting this sent home? Oh my God, why has this book got no words in it? I thought we're supposed to be learning to read. And it's all those things that happen in that first few years of school that seems a bit baffling to parents. And I think sometimes teachers forget that this is just, they do it every year. So sometimes the communication gets lost, or, you know, they send out a letter and it gets missing from the book bags and stuff. So I'm really hoping this book does bridge that gap. And then the first chapter is all about those kind of security questions, those things that you want to feel confident about. You know, what about it? I think my child might be dyslexic because they're doing their B's and D's backwards, you know, and I talk about that.
Do
and
you?
I talk about things like, and I talk about things like, how can I ask my children questions so I find out what they've done at school today? You know, how to do that so that you can actually hear some information you want to hear and not just,
how do you remember that? Because I do always, I'm always like, I can't remember where I read it. Someone said, oh, what was the funniest thing that happened at school today? So I try and do that. Like, what's the funniest thing? And Axel's like, I don't know. Or he'll just say something like, oh, such and such showed me their pants. I'm like, it's really not what I was looking for.
The good old days when such and such were showing you their pants, eh? Let's get back to those days, eh? I was just going to say about the dyslexia, because that's really interesting, because I was dyslexic. Well, I still am dyslexic. But I was diagnosed quite late. I think I was probably about 12, and it was quite late then. I was falling way behind, and I was failing most things and really was confused, and I was only good at drama and sport. So at what age can you sort of start identifying if there's a problem, and what should you sort of be looking out for?
So the thing that I talk about is how I think some parents can worry about it in the first few years, because when children are first learning to form letters and read, there's quite a big scope for what's considered like within the neurotypical bracket and wouldn't be worried for dyslexia. And that is things like reversing letters, mirror writing. So writing completely backwards. Children are amazing at it. They can literally do the whole thing flipped. And they'll do things like upside down, and they'll sometimes read things and guess things. And I think sometimes parents worry that that might be a sign of something there where they need additional support. And so I kind of talk about how, say, that until they are seven, all of those developmental stages are considered quite typical. And for the vast majority of children, a teacher won't be concerned at all. They'll be saying they're just going through these phases. And then there obviously will be some children who probably do have dyslexia, or perhaps some other co-occurring difficulties or disabilities that will start to become apparent in those years. And that's when, and I talk about how the teacher will flag it to you. They will tell you as soon as they spot it, or anything that they think they want to just get watched over or supported on, they will tell you straight away. So I'm sort of reassuring parents to not worry unless you hear something from the teacher. And then to say, around seven, if you are worried and they're still doing the things like reversing letters or really struggling to read, really struggling to write, I talk about some tips of things they can do, some organizations that they can contact. And then that's probably at about seven when the teachers will step in, and they'll talk to you about the school SENCO. So every school has a special educational needs coordinator, and they'll step in and give you some support and loads of guidance and talk to you about, okay, perhaps they need to be assessed for dyslexia. Around seven or eight, that's when they're in a stage where they've gone through all of the reading and writing development stages, and now's the time to perhaps think about, is there some additional support required?
So interesting.
It's good to know, actually, especially about the reverse letters, because I notice Axel does that a lot. Like, he'd do the B and the D round the wrong way or whatever, and sometimes it can feel quite frustrating, like, but what, you've written it all perfect all the way through, and then you've just done it on there, and it, yeah,
he's, I mean, five, it, George. It's no, not Einstein.
It's not frustrating for you, it's more frustrating for them. Because they, you know, they're like, oh, I've done it, and you, yeah, feel like, I've done it backwards.
Do I tell them? Because they've done such a good job on something, and you're
it's good that it's all normal.
Luna does this thing where she takes a little book to bed, and she just, it's the cutest thing I've ever seen. She basically just writes waves on her line. So like, but pages and pages and pages of it. And I say, what are you doing? And she says, oh, I'm just writing my story. But it's literally just her going like this. And then she goes, do you want to come and have a look at my story? And then we flick through the pages and she says, I love this part about the princess. And it doesn't, it's nothing. It's not, it's the most beautiful, every night she does it. But apparently that's so good because nice. That's like, it's encouraging them to kind of put pen to paper and shoulder pen, you know, it's lovely to see.
It's fantastic. Yeah, it's called pre-writing. So there's pre-writing shapes and skills that they're, you know, and if you could, That's amazing. It's such a great skill to start with, definitely.
And is this a thing? Like, do they need to build up the strength in their hand? Because yeah. I always, yeah, I'm okay, fine. Because that's what I was thinking. Like, that's really good that Luna did that. Axel was not interested, like, in drawing, in anything like that.
Right. And I do,
yeah,
Ewan,
and I, right. yeah,
no interest at all.
No, none. But then Gigi, she's only 18 months. She's happy to sit and paint, and she's happy to sit and draw, and all those. I mean, she's not drawing properly, but you know, like she's interested in
sketching
doing that. Oh yeah, she's you know, this piece of art in my bedroom Portrait. Was actually drawn by Gigi, 18 months. No, but she, you know, she likes doing that kind of thing. I think. It can be.
Is it a boy girl thing?
Yeah, I don't know. But it's just worrying sometimes for parents who want their children to be able to do all these things, but they're just not interested and you can't force them, can you? You literally, you can't.
I think, yeah, I mean, you can, you sort of, I think, and if you want to really generalize, you could say it's a boy girl thing. Boys seem to be more reluctant to write, and the sort of results in children's assessments and stuff sort of suggest that is the case. And a lot of teachers focus quite a lot of time on doing topics and things that are really exciting that some of the boys in their class might find exciting to encourage them to want to write. But I mean, obviously that's just complete generalization, and you'll get plenty of boys who really love drawing and writing absolutely. And are really great at the letters early. But yeah, my son fitted exactly the same as what you're saying there, Georgia, because you mean part of the reason I was so I've got so many writing games in my next book is because the whole of the first lockdown was basically a battle between you and me, you know, who was going to crack first. Was mummy's game going to be fun enough to get him to do some writing today, or was he going to still completely refuse
That's brilliant.
Whatsoever to do anything? And it was only when I got to some really good games that really captured his imagination that I got him writing, because I didn't want to put any pressure on him. He was only in year one, you know, we were just sort of, we weren't given anything specific to do. So I didn't want to make it like a you sit down here and write every day. But at the same time, I was kind of like, I don't want you to spend months and months not writing, picking up a pen, which is what he'd do if he had his way. So yeah, a lot of the games in the second book, I mean, there were a few in the first book, which was encouraging him as well to pick up a pen. But the second book is, yeah, all of those writing games, a few. And Florence will sit there, like you say, and she'll squiggle away. She's like carving out letters at three quite happily.
Amazing. And did you say you're writing another one?
Yes, I'm starting the next one like now, really. So now what
what's going to be
what's it going to be about?
So the next one is not educational based games, but it's like games for everything else. So I haven't decided on the title yet. It was originally called On the Go because I was going to do games for like in the car, on a train, on a plane, when you're waiting in a doctor's reception room, when you're on a restaurant. And it was going to be all games when you're out and about and like
when you're in a restaurant. That's an iPad, isn't it?
Well, yeah. And how do you want to do something else for 5 minutes so you can guilt-free hand them the iPad with a pen and a, you know, a paperclip that's all you've got in your bag type thing. So it's just going to be like little, and it's going to be a little a book, so you could chuck it in your handbag and it will be like, we can do a little game while we're bored here for a minute.
Brilliant.
So originally it was just going to be those, and then I kind of started thinking of some others, and I came up with games for like family get-togethers and parties, and when you've got a group of kids in your house and play dates, get off that quite a lot. What can I do so I don't just kind of ignore them for the whole
time. Let them get on with it.
Yeah, and it's just, and so I started gathering a few more. So the next book is literally going to be everything thrown into one, and it's no, there's no letters and numbers. It's purely just how can I entertain them for 5 minutes to keep them busy so that I can go and have a glass of wine. Or
yes, there we go.
Put my bum on the sofa for 2 minutes, and it's just going to be loads of really fun. And I want followers and people to get involved as well and send me like their family games, because you know every family has those funny games that you play.
Yeah,
and sometimes you'll hear someone else's and you'll be like, oh, that's a good one. So I kind of want to gather a few of those together and make it a bit more like a bit of a community kind of book where everyone's sharing fun things to do with your kids.
We've got a family game, but it's Uno. But you know, on the wild cards. Are you joking? We've got on the wild cards. We've got like dares to do. So ours are like pull your pants down and run around the garden.
Oh, that's good.
Dozza had to do it at the weekend. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. We've got house. We've got a house on that side looking in the garden. It's like half naked man. The other one is, it's a lot of pull your pants down stuff. My kids make it up. I mean, they love it. They just love it. I've done it too. Will there be any games? No, probably not.
Pull your pants, no games.
I'm going to do a page of a hungover parent, you know, or games. Yeah, can we have games where I can lie down on the sofa with my face like this in a bag of crisps? You know, it's going to be games for like everything, you know, hopefully.
Brilliant.
But I'm going to find a way to make it work. I don't know how yet.
Daisy, before we say goodbye to you, five products that every single parent has to have in their house to make their life easier.
Yeah, so I was going to say coverless duvets then, because that's like one of my favourite all-time things. So I don't have covers on my kids' duvets and I just wash them and dry.
What?
Yeah. No, seriously. So I've got from Little Owl. So Florence has got, she chose a pink one.
I'm writing
one,
this on my phone now.
He chose a blue one. So they're like beautiful, soft duvets and it's just the duvet. You don't need a cover on them. They're super soft.
So you don't have to change their beds?
So you just wash the duvet on its own. It goes in the washing machine, the whole duvet. And you take it out and it dries in about an hour. It's so fast. And then you just put it back on the bed.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
okay.
My God. This has blown my tiny mind.
Coverless duvet. That's one of my favourite things ever because I don't have to. And the kids just have a pillowcase and that's it.
Wow. That's great.
So they're handy, especially because Florence at the moment is trying to get dry at night. So that's, yeah.
That's every few really days good. Yeah.
So that's a good product. In terms of, my games, it's like, you know, you need things like masking tape. I always have masking tape in my house because I can do hundreds of games with masking tape. You can strip out the noughts and crosses where you're standing and jumping and throwing instantly with a bit of masking
Amazing.
Tape. We can do long jump in the lounge where they jump and then we measure and write it on the tape how far they jumped. You know, it's just millions of games you can do with a bit of masking tape.
Masking tape, okay, excellent.
That's definitely up there.
Yes.
And then I always just love having like a box of balls.
Me too.
Yeah, you know, we all have a bag of balls. And of all different sizes, bouncy ones, big ones, small ones.
Some as big as your head.
Diverse, include them all. that can do so many of my games are different types of balls.
Okay.
I talk about how if you don't have one, you can use balled up socks and tin foil and stuff like that. So that's, and then what's the other thing I use? Loads of plates and cups in my games, like kids' plates and cups. So whatever you prefer, but like something.
What are your
favourite
brands of like, plates and cups for kids?
In the past I've just bought the ones from Boots because they're all different colors.
Or IKEA
are really good.
Yeah, IKEA ones are good, aren't they?
Yeah, so I like those because they're all a different color, so you can play color games with them or you can do hunting games with them, or we do like shove plate penny games where we shove the plates along the floor and try and get them in the masking tape boxes or lines.
I need you so in my life. This is great. This like, so good.
One of my favourite things is to have some sort of colours of plates or boxes.
I mean, to be honest, the coverless duvets.
Yes, changed our lives.
That has changed our lives now.
Get yourself a children's coverless duvet, honestly.
And get yourself Daisy's books. It's out now.
Absolutely.
They're both out now.
Yay.
Everywhere.
On everywhere. Okay, brilliant. Daisy, thank you so much. Keep doing what you're doing. What a superstar. Lovely to chat to you.
Thank you very much for having me.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
See, I knew that my days at college when I was playing beer pong would come in handy because now toddler pong for the wing. How amazing.
I know. Yeah, do you know what? When we have these chats with people who are really good at making up games and playing with their kids, I go away and I think, wow, that sounds so easy. I'm going to do it. But I actually haven't yet. But what I have done is I have got Daisy's book.
Yes.
And I have had a little look through and there are definitely some ideas like drawing with chalk on the floor and then rubbing it out with a sock. Quite like that one. That's only you know,
outside,
two things
though,
I've
right?
got to get out of the car. No, on the wooden floor.
Yeah. I'm not going to draw with chalk my wooden floor, George.
I might, because mine's getting sanded soon, so it doesn't really matter for me. So, yeah, I mean, I've definitely got some more ideas now. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, anything to keep me away from, you know, when the phrase that I absolutely dread in my household from my children is, "Mummy, come and find me." And I'm like, I know where you're fucking hiding. You've been hiding there for the last 2 years and you always have your foot out of the fucking curtain. It's like, oh, I don't know where Kit's gone. I don't know where Luna... Are they, I mean, they love it, but I'm like, how long can I keep this facade up of not knowing where my children are? So to be honest with you, I'm going to get Daisy's books. I reckon it's going to be an absolute win. And I just think, yeah, I'm going to try and be more creative.
Yeah, and also anyone whose children are starting school in September, the starting school book sounds brilliant. And all of those things that we talked about during the interview, like the fears that we have, you know, it seems like such a big deal when your kids go into reception.
Yeah.
And actually, if they've been at preschool, it's quite, you know, it's quite an easy transition. But there are just a couple of things that are useful, definitely more useful than learning their alphabet.
Yeah, and obviously Luna's starting in September. So yeah. I'm going to definitely kind of document how she gets on in the lead up. And obviously, you know, starting and going through all of that. I am obviously feeling quite nervous. And actually, interestingly, every time we post something on Instagram about it, whether we do a story, you know, about the school starters, everybody is really, really interactive about it. And kind of, everyone feels the same. So
yeah, it's a weird pressure. So yeah, we will keep the content coming on that, because I can share, you know, how it's been this year and things that were useful, things that we really didn't need to do, all that kind of stuff. So definitely look out for that.
Yes. And as always, we would love you to rate, review and subscribe and follow the podcast. And please, if you know that there is somebody in your life who isn't involved in these conversations, that's not into podcasts, doesn't know how to listen to them, go on, give them a little tutorial, because we want to keep spreading the Made by Mama's word.
Yeah, absolutely. Send them our way. And if you do have any suggestions for Q&A topics that you'd like us to answer or guests you'd like to see, then please do just drop us a DM. We're on at Made by Mamas on Instagram, or you can get Zoe on her own channel at Zoe Hardman. And we'll be back on Friday.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.